Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Wow. I tell you, I walked into the studio today here on August 30th, and the energy was already exciting. It was like you guys came in for a warm-up last week just to sit here and practice and be ready to go. How are you both today?
We're doing well, but the energy really comes from the leftover drugs we did in the 80s.
And the Starbucks. We stopped.
Right. I forgot about the Starbucks.
I love it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a really fun show for you today. Michael's going to be joining us here in just a moment.
But are you sure of that?
Well, I don't even know that Michael actually exists, you see. I've heard rumors. He never lets me look him in the eyes.
So
it's
kind of
like Oprah. Look away. Look away. So, yes. No, he will be joining us. Michael
Does
just
he wear
finished.
A ring?
You know, he has a halo that just glows as he walks. Yes. Okay. Michael just finished LA's Next Great Stage Show. Have you guys heard of it?
No.
Okay. So this show is, he put this compilation together, I believe, 11 years ago, where it takes the best stage talents, singing, dancing, acting talents in Los Angeles, and puts them up in a competition, and they go up against each other. And he just had the finale of the show. I believe it was 6 weeks. A star-studded finale. Lots of good stuff going on there. But most interesting was when you got to kind of sit down and look at these kids and see the energy and the composure that these 20, 25-year-old kids had. It was amazing. Of course, in a couple weeks, we're going to bring on the winner, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
But. Oh, that's really wonderful. That really...
It's always nice to help new kids to come into the business and compete with you.
That's exactly right. You know. Exactly. That's what you want to do. You want to breed your competition.
That is exactly right. So they can push you aside and look at you as you sit in the chair and decay.
Yes.
Sounds exactly like what my children do to me.
There you go.
Daddy's getting older. Someday I'm getting the car. Well, now you both come from the stand-up world in the 70s, 80s, and 90s doing some amazing stand-up work. But not only that, your daughter is quite a well-known actress. Can you tell us who she is?
Well,
she?
Now she's a...
showrunner now, right?
Yeah. Yes, she is. She had the phenomenon of... We moved to California, to Hollywood, because Mark got a television series. Mm-hmm. Created by Joan Rivers, Husbands, Wives, and Lovers.
And Hal Dresner. Don't leave Hal out.
Okay.
I feel badly for him.
And she was in the High School of Music and Art and was raised in Greenwich Village. And when we told her we were moving her to Los Angeles, she, of course, at 15, hated us.
Wow.
And she came out, but we enrolled her in Beverly Hills High School in the drama department. And soon she was happy. And the second audition she went on, she got to
Don't.
Okay, okay. Go.
Here's really what happened. So we were working, my agent said to us, Claudia is 15, is not very much competition if she wants to go up.
Wow.
Now is the time.
Really?
So we sat her down, because she was with us on the road. We did a triple act in clubs, and we acted in regional theaters. And so she was with us, and she grew up in the theater.
She went to Stage Door Manor, right. The famous, acting school camp.
So we sat her down, and we said, honey, Michael has this. He'd like to send you out, but please, if you're going to feel... rejected, that it's your fault, because you're going to get rejected.
Yeah.
You're going to get rejected, but it's not your fault. You're a good person. You're talented.
Right.
Go through the whole spiel.
Good for you, though, putting that out there.
Okay. You know what a hard business we're in.
And she says, yes, I'll do that.
Wow.
The first show she goes up for was an hour kind of musical melange with Mary Tyler Moore. And she got the part of the niece who ran away from school to join the circus, to be in show business.
Yeah.
That was her first. Went up for a couple of others, didn't get them. Went up for Knott's Landing, got Michelle Lee's daughter, and was on the show for 7 years.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
We stopped talking to her the second week of production and didn't pick up that conversation until she was 24.
Because
now, Mark, obviously, people may know your voice. So certainly, anybody who's been in Los Angeles for a while, you guys have been involved in the business for many, many years. And even a more impressive accomplishment: married for 49.
Married for 49.
Some of them to each other, is that correct?
Some of them to each other. But the trick, I was explaining to you before, is the reason we lasted this long is because we don't talk to each other.
the key
and,
to a great marriage.
Well, I talk to Mark all the time, and he doesn't listen. That's really what really goes on. But we met actually as actors in an HB studio in Greenwich Village in Manhattan, and we were actors first, and Mark did a lot of theater and directing, and then got to do acting in L.A.
Wow.
And people know him from many things. Thank God It's Friday.
Right.
The movie.
But also one of his favorite things that people know him from is he had a cameo in The Wedding Singer.
Of course.
I played your father, the bride.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a little bit, too. Of course, now we have a lot of good things to talk about, and we want to come back, and we're going to actually formally introduce our guests so you can hear and find out who these two amazing people are.
You've gotten a little bit of a tease. I don't want a formal introduction.
Hey, we're very formal.
I'm wearing a T-shirt.
That's why I wore my tux today. I got my bow tie all straightened out, you know.
Right.
And, of course, so many good things that we have here on State of the Arts, and we're going to jump right back to it. Will you both be patient enough to hang around with us for a little bit?
No.
Mark's out. Mark's gone.
Yes.
He's a hard out five minutes into the show.
He's got to pick up his car.
Michael, it's so great to see you, and obviously such a pleasure to have, you know, this chance to get down to sit and talk a little bit today. It is obviously August 30th, and we have such a fun show for our listeners today. We teased it just a little bit. We have a powerhouse couple here that you've been married for 49 years.
What?
And they are the subject. They're not in this. It's actually about them.
Oh,
you've got to have
goodness.
Some clout when people write stories about you and put them on television. That's some serious life you've lived. So
absolutely.
It's an ABC sitcom, How to Live with Your Parents for the Rest of Your Life, written by their very famous and very talented daughter.
Well, they are here today, ladies and gentlemen, to tell us about their current project, Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin. An outrageous new comedy inspired by a true story of family dysfunction, atonement, and matzo ball.
Yes.
On stage now through September 23rd at the Matrix Theater, one of our favorite theaters of that size in town. Mm-hmm. Please welcome Mark Lanau and Joan Astro.
That's right.
Joan Astro.
Yeah.
We bust those people in.
That's really amazing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard their voices, and we're going to get back to talking to them just here in a little bit here. But, Michael, before we do that, we should go ahead and take a moment so we don't get kicked off the air and thank our very generous sponsors, yeah?
Kicked off the air?
I tell you, Princess will storm in here.
Oh.
Yeah. You don't want to miss them.
They'll float in here.
They'll float in here. I tell you, not true. In fact, we had a chance to meet two of their reps at Stage Star, and just such good people over there.
They're
really care about the arts so much. Their excitement is absolutely infectious, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was indeed.
Let's go ahead and say thank you to them.
We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, Princess Cruises for coming on board as our presenting sponsors for State of the Arts during 2018. A pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who will seek enriching experiences. Only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, culture, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world, renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment, and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to more than 360 destinations worldwide aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
So experience the next wave in vacation travel at the end of each month. From September to August, one lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships, and they are stunning. Make sure to enter every month for your chance to win. All you have to do is come to the LATalkRadioNetwork.com site and then go to Channel 2 and go to our site, State of the Arts, and you will see the Princess logo. Click on it. It registers you to win, and you can do that as many times as you like. But someone is going to win a trip that is valued at $5,000 per person.
Wow.
For just coming on with one click. Here.
That's a pretty good deal,
yeah,
no doubt about
so.
It. And as always, we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts here in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed.
Such great people over there, Michael. And obviously, I know you had a huge theatrical week. Now, we referenced it just a little bit a minute ago, but tell me about this star-studded finale of L.A.'s Next Great Stage Star.
L.A.'s Next Great Stage Star, for those of you who listen to the program, you know what that is. But for our guests this afternoon, you may not know what it is. It is the 12th year of a musical theater competition that I produced and I conceived. And for the last 3 years, it's been represented by Princess. They are so, as Andrew earlier stated, they are so engaged with the performing arts, and they are wildly supportive about this competition, which involves young people who are mostly new to musical theater and trying to find their footing. And it was a triple threat year for us, meaning they had to dance, they had to act, they had sang. And everyone in our community of the performing arts in Los Angeles, all of the people who make theater here, some 25 distinguished producers,
Tony Award winners, casting directors, that's right.
Yes, casting directors, directors, they all come together for this competition and judge these young people. There's a big cash prize involved. And the top agents in town are also judges, and they sign about 50% of the kids.
50%?
50%.
That's unbelievable.
That's
wow.
Our average.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we had a stunning finale this past Monday evening, and in the audience and on the stage were four of our special celebrity guest judges. John Lloyd Young, who created the role of Frankie Valli on Broadway, in Jersey Boys.
Won every possible award. Took all the awards home so nobody else could have any of them.
Every possible award that an American actor on Broadway could win for his debut on Broadway.
Amazing.
And also to that, Michael Leonard from The Waltons, who was just
great.
Lovely
he
and
was
wonderful.
Great. Yeah.
And the great Sam Harris, the original Star Search winner.
I thought you were going to say the original Sam Harris.
he is the original Sam Harris. And certainly a Broadway star as well. And my biggest thrill came from working with George Chakiris,
wow.
who was there.
Oh. Looked amazing.
83 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he still looked like Bernardo.
Yeah, that's true.
Truly, he did. His hair is still dark.
Yeah.
And he brought a chain link fence with him.
But he was so giving of his time.
Michael Leonard looked amazing too.
In fact,
I watched her, and I remember watching her when that show was on the air, and I thought she just looked brilliant.
Four-time Emmy winner for that show.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Four Emmys. That's and well deserved.
For that best actress.
It's that whole series was really. I mean, it was formative for a lot of people.
I think it was very much for 9 years it was something that everyone tuned in and got quite engaged in.
They did an episode where a hobo came through and he was talking to the young Walton boy who's the writer, the lead in the series, and John Boy. And he said at one point, John Boy said, "Oh, what a great life you have traveling around the country." And he looked at him, I don't remember who the actor was who did it, but he looked at him and he said, "No, I've wasted all my stories telling them away to kill time. I never wrote them down, I never did anything." And that meant so much to me as like a 9-year-old kid going, "Oh my goodness, if you give it away, if you don't culture it and nurture it, you just lose so much of that. It just, you put it out in the world and it disappears." I thought that was interesting.
That's why we wrote Jews, Christians, and Screwing Songs.
Right.
Not to lose those stories.
That's right. And I tell you, this is a funny show that I was reading up on a little bit too. We're going to get to talk about that in here just a minute. We should introduce our two amazing guests.
I think we should.
What do you think? Let's
They've been
do it.
Very patient here.
No,
very interested,
it.
Actually. Really?
She's interested. I'm not.
I could tell. I could tell by the way he was storming out. That's the way
he was.
Who
was he, a comedian?
No, nightclub owner.
Same difference.
Our first guest is a co-owner of the legendary improv comedy club chain, who developed flourishing comedy directing career in New York and regional theater.
As an actor, he has appeared in countless television shows and film projects. He is one of the stars of Thank God It's Friday and had a cameo in The Wedding Singer, which he particularly enjoyed, having given Adam Sandler his first break on the improv stage.
With his early years spent growing up in Brighton Beach and Coney Island, the hotbeds of communism, he was recruited to lead the 1978 comedy strike against the Comedy Store and Improv. The improv settled quickly, and ironically, he became co-owner in 1979.
Some production credits include Black on Broadway and the off-Broadway hit Cruel Intentions, the musical. He is here with us today, ladies and gentlemen, to tell us about his latest role as co-author and director of the tremendous new comedy, Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin. We are so happy to welcome Mark Leno to the show.
That's right. Mark Leno to the show.
It rhymes.
It's about time to go.
Yes. Close.
As we gently, it's Lanao, is that correct?
No.
How do you say it?
Lano.
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 Wow.
It was spelled L-A-N-O, Lano.
Okay, well, Lano. So now it's interesting because in looking over this, you each have it, you've been married for 49 years. But you're still working under the name that you came up under, correct? The name
yes.
that you worked under the
yes.
stage. And your daughter, what is her name?
Claudia
and her last Lano. Name. So she does go by Lana.
Well, now she goes, now because I was married once before, uh-huh. and her biological father is a man named David Rappaport,
uh-huh.
and we helped to raise his son, and I managed his son, who is the actor Michael Rappaport.
Right. Of course, I saw that connection there. I think there were a couple of photos.
He lived with us through high school.
Yes.
How interesting.
And then, yes. And then he tried stand-up, and he was the worst stand-up ever.
Wow.
To perform.
Wow. You could probably sell tickets just off that billing.
But you didn't mince any words.
No, the casting director of China Beach saw him. He was so bad, but he was charismatic, and he got a role on China Beach that I managed him. And now Claudia, the family is all together now, where everything's good, so she uses Claudia Lano Rappaport.
That's what I saw online, and of course, in this day of internet reading and researching, you never know what's actual and what's just some editor who's not qualified to edit. So.
I mean, everything on the internet isn't true?
I take it as true, but I've been proven
shocking.
Wrong multiple times. That's
absolutely.
Right. You can just look at my resume and find that out. So,
yeah.
One of the interesting things about your daughter is not only is she a showrunner, but she's a former actress as well.
Yes.
In fact, she was on Knott's Landing for a number of years, correct?
Well, we were explaining. Did we do that on air? I don't think so.
I don't
so.
Believe we did, no.
No, so when I was in Husbands, Wives, and Lovers, and Thank God It's Friday just came out,
mm-hmm.
then our name was pretty synonymous with being
right.
in show business. And our agent approached us and said, you know, Claudia's 15. This is a couple of years ago. This is the time if she wants to get into show business. Now is the time to audition.
Amazing.
Competition is very small. So we went to her and we said, honey, look, you've grown up in show business. You know, there's a lot of rejection, but we won't let you do this unless you can tell us that you will not take it personally when you get rejected, because you're going to get rejected, and they're not rejecting you as a person.
Right.
Yeah, you'll try not to, because it's going to hurt. You
yes,
know?
Of course. Okay, so she says, yes, I'll do it. Okay, we send her up on the first. She goes to be the niece, the runaway from home niece of Mary Tyler Moore on a very short-lived show, which was an hour musical comedy on CBS, I think,
mm-hmm.
gets the job.
Amazing.
No rejection. Goes up for two more, doesn't get the job. Goes up for Knott's Landing, gets Michelle Lee's daughter, and is on the show for the next 7 years.
Wow.
I beat her regularly just because I was so jealous.
Oh,
that was a joke. Don't
nothing
anybody
funnier,
write
nothing
me
funnier in. Than child abuse, man.
Well, there you
that's,
go.
That's great.
That. Child amused.
No, I got to tell you, these two, we taught our show's billed as irreverent. And when I saw this booking, I was so excited because when you can say the title of your show and laugh, Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin, I think I've said it probably five times and laughed every time.
Yes.
Where did this show come from? What's the basis of it?
Well, just before we do that, it is funny to hear that in the modern world that we live in, Claudia's marriage did not work out,
right.
and she came home. And that's so we raised our granddaughter with our daughter, and that's the way how to live with your parents.
Oh, that's funny.
For the rest of your life.
Oh, that's cute.
Emerged
okay.
because Sarah Chalk played Claudia, and
Who played
the tall
Brad Garrett?
Brad Garrett.
Oh, of course.
Played,
and he did
I was
it
played
on his
by,
knees the entire show.
I was going to say.
I was played
yeah.
by Elizabeth Perkins. And then when Isabella, our granddaughter, was accepted into Sarah Lawrence and was going to be leaving, Claudia said, okay, I'm getting my own place now. And her friends would say to her, you're leaving Mark and Joanne? And she said, did you really think I was going to live with them for the rest
of
my life?
You got a whole new episode.
And that's how the family story.
Was this a half-hour sitcom?
Yes.
And on ABC for a season, did very well.
Very cool.
It actually was the highest rated show in that slot. And they dropped it because they didn't own it 100%.
Oh, really?
They owned it half and half with Imagine, I think.
That's Ron Howard's
somebody,
company. Yeah,
and they dropped it.
And the next day she got offered a overall deal at NBC and Universal.
Yeah, she didn't look
literally
like she was struggling too much there. She's worked an awful lot in the past few years.
Literally at 9 o'clock the next morning, the phone rang with the offer from Universal.
Amazing.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's only 5 years ago.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Back to husband.
Well, and that's funny, too, because Jews, Christians, and How to Screw Stalin came kind of out of this same vein of talking about real life experiences in some level.
Right. I grew up with, they weren't actually communists. When they were younger, they were like revolutionaries from Russia. They had to run away from Russia long before I was even born. Mm. And so I grew up in this kind of amalgam of a lot of American, a lot of Russian, a lot of socialist ideas. They quickly acclimatized and became Americans, but
and Democrats,
and Democrats, and lingered. So their persuasiveness toward politics lingered. And we lived in a furnished room house, not a boarding house. People just rented rooms. Wow. And when I was really young, we rented lockers in the back for people to go to Brighton Beach. Mm-hmm. You know, they change in the back of the house. And I came up with this idea because my family was totally dysfunctional. My father deserted us. My mother was sick and went to the hospital for 11 years. But I came up with this reconciliation, imaginary reconciliation between a young man and his father who lives in a furnished room house. And it came out to be pretty funny. We have gotten some incredibly great reviews.
Wow.
Really,
well, we did it as a drama when Mark wrote it. And then
because my life is a drama.
And we did 4 performances of it at the Complex and as a drama. And that was really, and I played the role of the grandmother in that production.
Wow.
And Carl Reiner came and George Shapiro and a lot of our friends. And Carl said it reminded him so much of his grandmother. But he said, God, I see so much humor in this, Mark.
Wow.
I, you know, and then we were managing Lewis Black at the time.
Oh, funny.
And we had a relationship with James Niederlander, Jimmy Niederlander, and we gave him the play to read. And he also said, well, he said, a very funny man. And he said to Mark,
you're not Arthur Miller. But if you make this a comedy, we should talk. And then we make
could
it
be Neil Simon, you know. And so then we both started to write the comedy. And then so we're co-authors of the comedy.
Wow.
And then we decided, okay, let's see what it looks like.
That's wonderful.
You know, Carl Reiner is one of my favorites of all time. I think he's
absolutely a comic genius.
Yeah.
Really
what is he? He's like 96 now, something
like that.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, he's an amazing person, but the Dick Van Dyke Show for me was the perfect comedy. I just thought that was one of the best comedies ever written. Such a great cast and so authentic in its humor. I thought that was absolutely
incredible.
Great.
Incredible. Yeah. Rose Marie, right?
Wasn't she? We just lost her last year.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Carl's daughter, among other things, is a wonderful jazz singer.
Mm.
And she's actually performing at the Catalina on,
jazz club, of course,
on the 13th. And Carl rarely goes out, but he will come out that night, and Mel will be there, and Norman Lear, and it's... They're icons.
Well, we should mention, too, we just lost Neil Simon, of course, who you mentioned a moment ago. And what an amazing talent he was, and what an offering he gave to the theater community and to the film community that I just, I was looking back at his work after he passed, and what an amazing thing. What an amazing writer.
Oh, incredible. I mean, he changed the face of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
After Neil started writing for Broadway, that was it.
That's
the format you had to follow, pretty much.
Yeah, that's true.
And he continued to grow as a writer. He started out as,
I think when he passed, he was 6'7".
But I'm bummed.
Yeah, I've got to hold on. I've got to go through and find my buttons here because that was a rim shot I never saw coming. Man, the deadpan comedy timing here. That's pretty impressive. I got to tell you, one of the things that we were joking about, before the show was this idea that making it in the entertainment industry and staying married for all those years has got to be a bit of a challenging thing.
Are we still married?
No, not technically. Once you're on our show, it's an automatic divorce. That's what happens to a lot of people. I got to tell you, the thing that was so fun about that was to talk about some of your road stories and some of the things that happened. Joanne, you were telling me a little bit about one that happened in Indianapolis. Would you mind relating that story?
I will. Before I do that, I will just tell you the theory that we have, which I think is true. Every time we were about to break up, something worse happened that we had to take
perspective,
care of.
Perspective in large doses.
And that got us through. That was...
And today, before today, you thought that's it, and then you came on our show and said, "Hey, at least we're not those two fools, so we can."
Well, we're not through with it yet. We're
and,
just forming that opinion.
Love it.
And collaborating. We've always collaborated. We've always worked together, but not on the level that we are now. So it's been very challenging.
That's
got to
be challenging.
Are you exclusive collaborators, or do you branch out with other people?
Is it an open writing
started?
It's just us. As far as the writing the plays, just us.
We're working with a wonderful producer, though, Raquel Lehrman from Theater Planners. Yeah. And so she knows
know
the world.
Well. Yes,
she knows the world, and she's been fabulous.
Yes,
but
well.
We did the casting, and with Jamie Rudofsky. I mean, we've had...
I know Jamie, too. Mm-hmm.
A great team. Yeah. We really have had a great team. So I did stand up, because the interesting thing was when how families go through things. In New York, I had a very successful commercial career. And in fact, at one point was making the money. But Mark, because of his, Mark, because of his being raised in a rooming house, we lived in 52 McDougal, which was a tenement, and the man who owned that house was a patron of the arts. So Mark was the superintendent, and we paid no rent at all.
Wow, that's great.
Yes, and he waited on tables under the table. So we now say we were never richer than when we were in New York.
We were both in therapy. We went to Europe on the money.
Wow.
Yeah.
Best of times, worst of times.
Wonderful actors and artists lived in the building, Paul Benedict, and it was a great...
David Margolies.
So now we come to California. Now, Claudia's on Knots Landing. He's on doing gangbusters on these shows. And a really odd, unpleasant thing happened to me. In New York, I played the Midwest housewife. In Los Angeles, I was suddenly too Jewish. Because I do have somewhat of a New York accent, so the work stopped, but I wasn't Jewish enough. I wasn't a caricature.
Caught in the middle. Yeah,
I wasn't a... So then we bought into the club, and, well, if I wanted to have a career, I would have to become a stand-up comedian, and that's how I...
And you started at what age? What age was your first stand-up gig?
I was in my late 30s,
that's
38.
Amazing.
It's the right time to start.
Right. You've already been jaded by everything else in life.
Right.
Might as well laugh for a while.
You get that skewed look at the world.
Oh, I have another really wonderful story. The first out-of-town gig was in Dallas. I was terrified, and I was the opening act because I was new, and I didn't get a laugh.
Wow.
And the show is over, the whole night I didn't need a laugh, and now I'm sitting at the bar, I'm expecting to be fired, and the young manager, whose name was Billy Bob, really was, came
can't
over
make this
to
stuff
me.
Up, right.
No, you can't make this stuff up. And he says, "What's the matter, ma'am? You look so sad." And I said, "Billy Bob, they didn't laugh. He said, "You cannot think about it that way, ma'am. You have to think about it this way."
Wow.
"You're a middle-aged Jewish woman who's a divorcee in Dallas. You're lucky you're alive."
He said that? And, wow.
And he said, "You stick with it. You're going to be on that stage and you're going to win them over."
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh my. And I tell you what a way to put advice. Ooh. That's crazy. Now, obviously you did stick with it and so many good things came of that. Of course, one of the great things that we're talking about here today is Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin. It's a show that's going up at the Matrix Theater. That's located at 7657 Melrose Avenue. If you haven't been down to the Matrix, that's a beautiful, intimate house. It's a really great place to see a show. Easiest way to get tickets, you can call 323-960-4412.
Or go to plays411.com/matzoballs.
That's right. That's right. You can, of course, get tickets for a great, great price. Previews are only $20, and then regular price is $35. So yeah. Pretty amazing.
What about some of our promotions?
Do we have deals?
Yes. Well, for theatricals. Monday nights, we do a show every Monday, and we do that for people who work over the weekends,
great.
Mostly the stand-up, and it's a pay what you can.
That's exactly what I can afford.
There you go.
Amazing. That's a great night. Pay what you can
and
Monday nights.
We did it once, and so many comics and performers came up to us, not only for the cheap price,
right.
but also because it was a night they didn't work.
Wow.
And they said, thank you. So we then decided to do it every Monday.
Now, we should say previews start August 16th, and
yeah,
the show runs through the
24th. We're out of the previews okay. now. Yeah, we're yeah, into yeah, the yeah. regular
yes,
show.
Yes, and now cool. actually we're meeting with Raquel this evening to discuss a possible extension.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
But now we run all the way to the 23rd of September, correct?
Right.
Yes.
So further.
Your previews were held in the same space, correct?
At the Matrix? It was all the same theater.
Was it being rewritten up till the last
bit? It's being rewritten up to this very moment.
When you were talking about that earlier, it was so interesting to see because I think comedy has to evolve. And I can imagine even with a structured show like this, you have to do something.
And one reviewer who gave us a very, very good review said, "It's really great and you have to understand, and I understand that it's in the 99-seat house, and so it's still a work in progress."
Wow.
And I went, wow, this, I think it was a woman, really understands what this is about. Because we rewrite it and put in new jokes, new material, alter things that maybe don't work as well every night.
Yeah.
So it really, it's better than it was the night the reviewers came.
That's a great thing. Very cool. Very cool.
It's really been an honor to do it because it is an homage. The neighborhood that Mark and I were raised 15 minutes apart from each other at a very special time in history. It was right after, the war years into when they were pouring.
When you say the war years, you have to say WW2.
You got to specify the war.
Yeah.
They were pouring so much money into education into New York City, and we went to high schools where Barry Mann, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, wow. Chuck Schumer, and Lincoln.
The tokens, Neil Diamond, Arthur Miller.
My goodness.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the Irish, the Italians, and the Jews lived together in pretty much harmony.
Wow.
Not our parents who were on the Lower East Side. Then it was gangs of New York.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we got to that area of Brooklyn, there was harmony. And Mark's grandparents, they were just amazing in that they were these blue-collar Jews who you don't know about. That's where the people who are seeing it are just enjoying. Some, you know, everybody thinks nowadays of Woody Allen and, you know.
And we integrated all the crazy idiosyncrasies that I grew up with, basically, in Brooklyn, like the way a Russian drinks tea. And it is different. It's absolutely different. You don't put, as we say, you don't put the sugar in the tea. You put it between your teeth.
Yeah.
And it's a special sugar, and you sip the tea over the sugar.
Wow.
And it becomes a joke.
Not dentist recommended, necessarily.
those who kept their teeth would say different.
But we got a review. We got a review from a Fairfax paper from Russian, who they, in English and Russian,
wow,
who loved it so much.
Wow.
Because it reminded them of their home, you know.
And, you know, there are so many jokes in it, you know, because the young Irish girl, half German, half Presbyterian, half Catholic, half Presbyterian, she looks around, she says, "You're Russian, don't you drink, don't you make tea in a samovar?" And, "What, you see a samovar?" "No." She said, "Well, we didn't have money." "You didn't have money for a samovar? You going to turn it off?"
Ladies and gentlemen, the in-studio conversation you're missing. We need to be doing Facebook Live today.
Yeah.
These two are as entertaining offstage as I'm sure they are on. Obviously, the show we're talking about here today is Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin. It's a new comedy going up at the Matrix Theater. We'd certainly invite you to visit Plays 411. Find out about tickets about that.
And that is performances through September 23rd and with a possible extension that is being discussed at this time. So check it out, and you can do that by calling 323-960-4412 or go to plays411.com/matzo balls.
That's right.
It's so funny to say that. To hear you say it, you have such a beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you very much.
Slash.
I want to ask you, did you, one of my clients, what I do also other than producing, I have a nightclub here, too, called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Uh-huh.
And 12 years into this, producing the best of Broadway performers in concert and artists who are dedicated to the Great American Songbook, my mentor in my lifetime was Rosemary Clooney. And I had the great fortune to remain her friend until the day she died. And she taught me everything about music.
Wow.
And one of the elements that has, you know, the club is active 7 days a week, but what I produce is what I said, music of Broadway and the Great American Songbook. On other nights, there are comedy nights, there's jazz nights. Being that you were involved and are, or you're still involved with the improv, no?
I'm a consultant. My partner and I sold out, but very recently, only Bud Friedman, last February. So it's only been 5 months, but I'm a consultant.
I wanted to know if you'd ever worked with a former client of mine, David Brenner. Wasn't David
yes.
Out there?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. Without
must.
Question.
Oh, yes.
Yes. But there, no, I did. I had no friction with David.
No.
Mr. Friedman, on the other hand, had friction with David.
David.
So, yes, we did work with David Brenner. And David actually approached Bud many years ago now to kind of make up, but Bud wouldn't have it.
Oh, really?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's interesting, of all the names in the world, to pick David Brenner.
Well, Michael, you repped him for a number of years, didn't you?
Yes, for several years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also repped Andy Gibb for his entire career, and that is how David and I really got together as far as public relations representation. And they would do dates. Andy was making his debut in Las Vegas, and David was his opening act.
Right, right.
Which his manager was, what? Were they opening act? But it worked very, very well. It was at the MGM, and then the Riviera picked them up for a long-term basis.
Yes, because I remember David doing that for a long time.
Yeah, he was a lovely man.
He was. Sorry to lose him, but... Yeah.
He also performed, I think he broke in the act, Mark waited on tables at a club, a comedy club in Sheepshead Bay
called Pips. I don't remember David. I don't know if David.
Oh,
I think David maybe dropped in once or twice. But
because
really
he was
work.
From Philadelphia.
He was from Philly, yeah.
But it was owned by a man who was a stand-up comedian but couldn't make it. and bought a club and was Rodney Dangerfield and Lenny Bruce's best friend.
Wow.
A man named George Shultz.
Well, of course, you guys saw Jerry Seinfeld come up. You saw all the people.
Well, yeah, we were in the clubs when that was
amazing.
Going on, yes.
Yeah. No, that must have been a very strange time, too, for comedy. It's right after the strike, and you guys are kind of, you're breaking new ground for comedy.
No,
right?
No, well, we were in New York before the strike. That's when Larry David, Jerry, and a whole slew, Bob Shaw, Elaine Boozler, you know, people who you might or might not know. That was before I bought into the club.
We had a comedy trio in New York called Off the Wall and earned our living performing in colleges. And so when Mark got the series, our natural place to hang out was the newly opened Improv in L.A.
And the reason I bought into the club, actually, is because when I got here, we came out on a vacation, and my agent in New York said, we came out with Madeline Kahn as friends when she was doing Young Frankenstein. And when we said to my agent, we're going to go out to L.A., he said, oh, I have a co-agent. You know, let him send you up for a job. You get a job. It'll pay for the vacation. Great. So I go up, and I got Husbands, Wives, and Lovers, you know, within a week.
Wow.
Okay, so we moved out to do the shows, actually shoot here, and I did not stop working for the next 4 years.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And then on the air came the nighttime soap operas. And with my face, my autobiography.
Memoir.
My memoir will be how I got into the nightclub business. There are no Jews on Dynasty.
Because it's true. All of the Norman Lear, Gary Marshall, they all went away.
Yeah,
and
you go,
and that's how Claudia got it.
And that's how, yes.
So, wow. Anyway.
See, that's showbiz.
Okay, well, okay, Husbands, Wives, and Lovers was an hour-long sitcom, the only one ever.
I remember.
Okay.
Really? Wow.
Yes, and we did very well. We had a 19 rating, 19 million people watched, and they dropped us because the breakpoint was 20 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, if you get 400,000, you're
in good shape.
Well,
yeah,
exactly. Look at the number of networks involved.
Yeah, and so David Jacobs, who created Knott's Landing, saw Husbands, Wives, and Lovers. He said, well, that's too long for a sitcom, but as a soap opera, that would work. And he tried to sell it. He couldn't sell it.
Right.
But he then sold Dallas.
Mm.
And once Dallas was a hit, they asked him, you have anything else? And he said, Knott's Landing.
Wow.
So he gets Knott's Landing on the air. And who's Michelle Lee's daughter? Claudia Lama.
Amazing.
So the
irony.
Whole circle.
That is.
It was like, wow.
But again, okay. I mean, with everything, with Murphy Brown doing a reboot and all these shows that are doing reboots, I would think that maybe
it's coming
back
on the air soon. Or
it is. I believe it may have just started. But
yeah.
Well, they have the posters up.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's so many others that they're
the
doing.
Date. They say Sunday, but they don't say the date.
Oh, of the start. Yeah, maybe it's this. Is there a season? I was just going to say season. I don't think.
Well, and with streaming services, everything has changed so much too. But I would think that again, Netflix and Hulu, these would be great resources to circle back to, maybe to reboot that show.
Yeah, yes. And Claudia could probably do it, but she'd have to walk on her knees.
The further irony is that the man who plays the grandfather, the Zeta Murray, is a wonderful actor by the name of John Plachette.
Okay.
Who was
in
relation
to Suzanne?
Yes.
Oh, cousins.
First cousins.
First cousins.
Yes.
How funny.
Who was also on Knott's Landing.
Okay.
And his wife, who was a literary agent, Lynn Plachette, she was married to David Jacobs.
Wow.
So the whole
six
little, degrees.
That is a lot
incest.
Of connections.
Yeah.
Well, now we've jumped around a lot today, and I wanted to be sure that we come back to you, Joanne, a little bit about kind of what you've done in your career. You're not only an amazing stand-up comedian, a headliner for years and years and years, but also you produced HBO's Emmy-nominated Grammy Award-winning special, Black on Broadway. You co-produced the off-Broadway hit Cruel Intentions, the musical, correct? And you've been involved in so many of these great things. Tell me how this new show, Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin, kind of how what it means to you at this stage in your career after doing all those other pieces.
Because I lived it, and the Yiddish word for Christian maiden is shiksa.
Mm-hmm.
It's my only time that I'll ever be a shiksa, because the character based on me is, and the character of the grandmother was such an unusual woman. I have had not met anyone quite like her. Because
wow.
Mark's grandmother really was at 16 on the streets of the Moscow, a young activist.
Wow.
And when she came here, she also worked to form unions. And she worked this rooming house. His grandfather, I never knew him because he had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so important, and she and I had such a loving and relationship that when we decided to do this project, it was such a gift, you know, to do and to write with Mark, because we both had such a strong feeling
yeah.
and so proud of the fact. You don't know how many dinners we have had based on, we'll say, to someone. You know, Mark's great uncle was the first president of the Soviet Union
wow.
and was the signed the death warrant for the Tsar.
Oh, my goodness.
And was the lead shooter in the firing squad.
I'm sorry.
That's fact.
That's amazing.
And there was a city named.
We've got 1 minute left, and you reveal that with 1 minute left in the show?
Well, you have to come and see the show.
Well, hey, if that is not a plug, I don't know what is. What an amazing thing. One more question for each of you. We've got a bit that we do called, and you got to wait for the amazing sound effect.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Production budget for the whole year goes into that sound effect. So what we like to do is we like to talk about a small moment in your career where maybe something went horribly awry and yet you survived it. Mark, do you have anything for us?
Oh, yeah. So I'm in this very successful improv group. We're doing clubs all over the country. We open for Maynard Ferguson. We open for Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. We're really
wow.
successful. We kind of split up. I come out to L.A. to do the shows, and I start working on a stand-up act, and I want to try it out, you know, in New York. I go back to the club, and they give me Saturday night at 10 o'clock. I have never been on the stage as a stand-up. It's quite different to be with two other people on
yeah.
stage. I have no problem with that. I get up, and I do a piece from the triple act. I kill. I almost
wow.
get a standing ovation.
Wow.
I go into my written material, and it goes from a standing ovation, or almost a standing ovation, to deathly silence. Not a laugh. Not a titter. I am standing on stage, and I'm looking out. It's a packed house. This is 10 o'clock Saturday night
right.
at the New York Improv. There's no seat. And I actually had to say, Glenn, who is the MC, take me off, please.
Oh, my
goodness.
Si simpatico. Joanne, what you got for us?
Okay, I'll do a quicker one, then we'll come back at another time.
That's a deal. You said it on air. That's a verbal contract.
I also was on stage in El Paso.
Wow.
In a long, narrow, well, it was 250 people, and I had a panic attack. And I'm standing on stage, and I'm now, thoughts are going through my mind. I'm dying.
Yeah.
I'm dying. And through the mic, I said, again, the audience knew, and they got very, very quiet.
Wow.
And I, Jim, I'm not feeling too well. And he comes running down this room. And by the time he got there, it had passed. So I went from Jim, I'm in, okay. And then I said to my husband.
You sprang back into it. Did you finish your set?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
God bless you.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
And that's a show in and of itself. That's amazing.
Really. I want to ask one real quick
Let's
question, too. Of all, since you are living in the world of comedy, who is your favorite nighttime host of late night television?
Michael asked this question hoping you'll say him. Will you say Michael Sterling
no
of State of the Arts?
John Oliver.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
Stephen Colbert.
I love Stephen Colbert.
He's great.
Yeah, he would be my second best.
Yeah.
What about Jimmy Kimmel?
Jimmy Kimmel is very good.
I think he's amazing.
Yeah,
he is really very good.
Because he is him. He is himself.
Oh, without question.
And he somehow has that very, very intelligent way of getting that across to people and still being very, very funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it.
I did not particularly take to Stephen Colbert at the beginning, but boy, I'm such a fan of his now.
Yeah. Yes, but he grew.
And oh my God, the fun he's having. Really.
John Oliver goes deeper than the others. Mm. And for someone who watches stand-up every day of my life for 40 years. Deep is good.
Yes.
What a pleasure to have you both.
But just so I want to give a shout out to our favorite comedian is our dear friend and very funny, wonderful person. Two of them. Elaine Boozler and...
Love her.
Kathy Ladman, who is playing Bubby.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Obviously, great talents. And we want to say a big thank you to both of you, Mark and Joanne. Thank you so much
for being here. Thank you. You
promised to come back on and talk to us again. So I'm going to tell people that when they go see Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stall, and they need to come up and ask you if you'll take them shopping for mascara in Indianapolis, Indiana, okay?
If they want to spend the night in jail, that's absolutely.
We'll hopefully get to that story another time. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on State of the Arts today.
Thank you, Mark, such a pleasure
to sit across from
you. Thank you, sir.
My name is Andrew David James.
I'm Michael Sterling. And where will I see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.